Buddhism as an Education, a talk delivered by Venerable Master Jin Gong, Ankang Primary School, Taipei, 1989. Chapter 1, The Cause of Our Chaotic World. Today's societies in Taiwan and elsewhere in the world are rather abnormal, a phenomenon that has not been witnessed before either in the West or the East. Some Westerners have predicted that the end of the world will occur in 1999, and that Christ will return to earth for Judgment Day. Easterners have also predicted impending disasters that are similar to those predictions in the West, the only difference being the time frame, which is some 20 years later. Some of these are ancient prophecies, which we should not place too much importance on. However, if we view our environment objectively, we will realize that this world is really in danger. Environmental pollution has become a serious problem, and now mankind has finally begun to understand the need for protecting our environment. However, the problem of mental or spiritual pollution is many times more serious than that of the environment. This is the source of worldly ills which not many people realize. The Chinese have a saying, "Education is most essential to establish a nation, train its leaders, and its people." For centuries, the Chinese have always believed in the primacy of education, which is considered the foundation for a peaceful and prosperous society. It provides the solution to a myriad of social ills and leads the way to changing one's suffering into happiness. Education has a strong impact on the nation and its people. Moreover, elementary school is the foundation, the basic building block in an educational system. Chapter 2, Buddhism as an Education. Buddhism officially came to China in 67 AD. The emperor had sent special envoys to India to invite Buddhist monks to come to China to teach Buddhism, which in that period was regarded as an educational system and not as a religion. Regretfully, about 200 years ago, the practice of Buddhism had taken on a more religious facade. Therefore, the purpose of this talk is to correct this misunderstanding by leading us back to the original form of Buddhism as taught by Shakyamuni Buddha. Buddhism is Shakyamuni Buddha's educational system, which is similar to that of Confucius, for both presented similar viewpoints and methods. The goal of Buddhist education is to attain wisdom. In Sanskrit, the language of ancient India, the Buddhist wisdom is called Anattara Samyak Sambodhi, meaning the perfect, ultimate wisdom. Buddha teaches us that the main objective of our practice or cultivation is to achieve this ultimate wisdom. He further taught us that everyone has the potential to realize this state of ultimate wisdom, as it is an intrinsic part of our nature, not something one obtains externally. However, most of us have become confused through general misconceptions and therefore are not able to realize this potential. So if we break through this confusion, we will realize this intrinsic part of our nature. Thus, Buddhism is an educational system aimed at regaining our own intrinsic nature. It also teaches absolute equality, which stemmed from Buddha's recognition that all sentient beings possess this innate wisdom and nature. Therefore, there is no inherent difference among beings. Everyone is different now because we have lost our true nature and have become confused. The degree of wisdom exhibited by individuals depends on the degree of delusion and has nothing to do with the true nature of the individual. Buddhism helps us to realize that innate, perfect, ultimate wisdom. With wisdom, we can then solve all our problems and turn suffering into happiness. Due to our lack of wisdom, we perceive, view, and behave foolishly, and thus suffer the consequences evoked by our incorrect actions. If we have wisdom, our thoughts, viewpoints, and behavior will be correct. How then can we suffer when there are no ill consequences to suffer from? Of course we will be happy. From here, we can see that suffering is caused by delusion, and the source of happiness is our own realization of wisdom. Buddha's teaching contains three major points: discipline, meditation, and wisdom. Wisdom is the goal, and deep meditation or concentration is the crucial process towards achieving wisdom. Discipline, through observing precepts, is the method that helps one to achieve deep meditation. Wisdom will then be realized naturally. Buddha's entire teachings, as conveyed in the sutras, never really depart from these three points. Buddhism encompasses the entire collection of works by Shakyamuni Buddha, which is called the Tripitaka. This can be classified into three categories: sutra, vinaya, and shastras, which emphasize meditation, discipline or precepts, and wisdom, respectively. Buddhist education is based on filial piety, as is the Chinese culture. Prior to the introduction of Buddhism to China, filial piety was the pillar of society and was supported by the wise men of ancient China. When Buddhist monks came from India to China and started to discuss Buddhism with government officials, it was immediately apparent to everyone that Buddhism shared numerous similarities with the indigenous Confucian traditions. As a result, the government embraced them and requested that the monks stay in China permanently. The first two monks who came to China, Mautun and Zhufarlin, were received by Hong Lu Su, which is equivalent to our present Foreign Ministry or State Department. Su was designated as a ministry of the government. The chief of Hong Lu Su is equivalent to a foreign minister or secretary of state. However, Hong Lu Su could only receive foreign guests temporarily. In order to allow them to stay permanently, the emperor added another ministry, Bai Ma Su, to take charge of Buddhist education. Originally, Su had nothing to do with a temple, but merely denoted a ministry of the imperial court. Now it denotes a temple in contemporary Chinese. So there were two ministries in charge of education. Li Bu, managed by the prime minister, was in charge of the traditional Confucian educational system. This organization served the same function until the early 1900s. As the emperor had given enormous support to Bai Ma Su, Buddhist education rapidly spread throughout China. In many instances, it had even far exceeded the efforts to educate people than the traditional education system of Li Bu. Consequently, there may not have been a Confucian or Manfucian school in every village, but there was a Su everywhere. Again, The Buddhist Si or temple used to be an educational institution and did not perform religious ceremonies at all, unlike what often takes place in contemporary temples nowadays. Another important mission for the original Si was sutra translation. The scale of the translation effort is hard to imagine today. During the 7th century, the famous monk Xuanzang had supervised 600 scholars in sutra translation. Prior to this, a monk named Kumaraja had a translation team of about 400 scholars. Therefore, Si was a large governmental organization. Unfortunately, it was completely transformed into a place to deal with superstition and spirits around 200 years ago. Its educational characteristics totally disappeared, which was truly regretful. Today, there are four types of Buddhism being practiced. First, there is the religious Buddhism, which can be witnessed in temples throughout Taiwan. However, this does not represent the real Buddhism. Second, there is the academic Buddhism being taught in many universities today, where we see Buddhism being treated purely as a philosophy, an academic pursuit, especially in Japan. This is not exactly Buddha's education either. Third, which is the most unfortunate of all, is the total degeneration of Buddhism into a cult. This third type of Buddhism is much more damaging to the general public than the first two types. Finally, there is the traditional Buddhism, the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha in its true essence, which is very rare in our day and age. Chapter 3. The author's own experience with Buddhism. When I was a young student in Nanjing, I did not believe in any religion. I went to church with some classmates to learn about Christianity. Although I tried to understand it, I could not find a way to accept it. My favorite religion at that time was Islam because its emphasis was on moral principles and ethics, and I thought that this was rare among religions. When I came in contact with Buddhism back then, the monks were not very convincing. Therefore, I could not accept Buddhism either, and it was the one I resisted the most. I was too young at that time and had not met a true practitioner. After I arrived in Taiwan, I heard of Professor Dong Mei Fong, who was then a famous philosopher and a professor at the National Taiwan University. Having become an admirer of his, I wrote him a letter asking about taking a class from him at the university. Professor Fong was only in his 40s at that time. He invited me to his house and told me, "Nowadays in school, professors don't act like professors, and students don't act like students either. If you come to the university and expect to learn something, you will be sorely disappointed." When I heard this, I was pretty upset since he had basically poured cold water over my plans. Finally, he told me, "Well, why don't you come to my house every Sunday, and I will give you personal instruction for 2 hours." I could not believe that he was so compassionate towards me. I learned about philosophies at Professor Fong's small table in his little living room, one-on-one. This was extremely precious to me. He introduced the philosophies of the West, China, India, and finally, Buddhism. He taught me that Buddhism is the pinnacle of the world's philosophy and that it provides the greatest enjoyment for mankind.